Hi, this is Dr. Dave of the Shrink Wrap Radio Psychology Podcast, and you're listening to Drs. Brian McDonald and Giuseppe Spezzano of Family Anatomy, an excellent resource for your family. Take it away, Brian and Giuseppe.
You probably know someone who's tried one. eHarmony, Match.com, LavaLife, or another online dating site. At first glance, these services seem to offer a better chance of meeting a soulmate than blind dates or finding someone in a bar. But does internet dating really increase your chances of finding a romantic partner? Find out what Dr. G and I think this week on Family Anatomy.
Hosts of Family Anatomy are psychologists, but they're not your psychologist.
So if you need to talk to someone about family or mental health issues, you can get a referral from your family doctor. This show is for information only.
Welcome to Family Anatomy, your source for parenting and relationship information, with your hosts, Dr. Giuseppe Spezzano
and Dr. Brian McDonald. You can find us at familyanatomy.com or over on iTunes, and we will get right into the internet dating scene today.
Let's do it now. Here's the thing.
Do you have a profile?
Well,
let's go.
Well, here's what I thought. For like, this was an idea that you had, and I was
the
game
topic
for
was
it.
An
yeah,
idea.
The idea. The yeah, that's right. Yes. And I was game for it. And when I started to research it, I thought to myself, wait a minute. I've never been on an internet dating service, and I'm going to do a show about internet dating. I better get on one, you know? So I tried. I went on one to, you know, get a feeling for what it's like.
Marriedbutlooking.com?
That's right. And actually, I have a date later tonight, so if you don't mind speeding up the show.
We better hurry up and get through this then.
Yeah.
No, you tried eHarmony, right?
I did try eHarmony just to see what it would be like. It's interesting because I did it with a fake name, and I'm one of these people that we're going to talk about. You know, I did it with a fake name. Of course, I don't want to be on the site, but I just wanted to know what it was like to be on the site. So
right.
I put a fake name and a fake email just to get a feeling for what it was like. But the funny thing is that once you start answering questions, well, it kind of triggers your mind. So some of them you're answering honestly, and some of them you're going, oh, I don't know, and... You know, I don't want, it isn't a real profile.
You were
so
trying to be
I was
careful.
Trying to just answer everything as if it was fake. But then sometimes I thought, well, why not? I wonder what I do think about that, you know, so I would answer honestly.
They've got you now.
They do, except it's under some phony address. I think I used Brian McDonald at Gmail or something.
Oh, nice. All right, then. I better change my email address immediately.
Yes. So it was an interesting experience.
So what kind of questions are they asking?
You know, well,
because eHarmony, before we go on, eHarmony is one of those sites where they're matching you up based on your compatibility. They're asking you all of, I think there's a psychologist even who's involved with this process, and they've developed this questionnaire that's supposed to identify your similarities to someone else. Right?
That's right. So they're asking a lot of different things about your lifestyle, about your interests.
So it's not like if
religious...
you were a tree, what kind of tree would you be?
No, was the kindergarten dating site, which I didn't go to.
That's a Barbara Walters question.
Yeah. Is it?
Yes, it is.
So interests, religious feelings, different activities that you like to do, and then more personality characteristics as well.
Yeah, you know what? And they're using those in some of the new ads, right? I think I saw an ad last week or the week before, and I don't even remember what site it was for, but some guy was standing there saying, you know, I said on my online profile that I like soccer, but unless I'm playing soccer 24 hours a day, You know, I'm not really going to meet my soulmate by saying I like soccer. So they're asking much more detailed questions. And I bet that was an eHarmony ad, actually.
Well, here's the interesting thing, too, is when I was answering the questions falsely, I was trying to move through it quickly because, you know, I had other things to do, it actually would stop me with a message saying, if you click the same answer several times, you're really limiting your chances. Like I was saying, strongly agree a lot, you know, or something.
Okay.
And so it cautions you to be more focused and attentive to your answers, and that presumably is going to make it easier to find your match.
If that process actually works.
If it did
work,
which
is one of the things that we're going to probably be talking about today.
Yes.
Do you know anyone who's actually dated someone that they've met over the internet?
Many people.
Isn't that funny?
Oh, yes. Because
I can think of a number of friends who... In fact, I can think of someone I knew a while back who had to make a decision between continuing to date someone that he'd met on one of those online sites and dating someone that he met sort of in his real life, face-to-face. Yeah.
I know two people who were married from starting from internet dating.
Really? In World of Warcraft?
No.
Not an online dating site, World of Warcraft. No. But you do hear stories about people who get married from there.
That's right, married from there. And I've heard other situations where people are online on these dating services and try for a long, long time to find the right person, and they don't. Mm-hmm. And they get very discouraged. So I have both ends of the continuum there.
Okay. So when did all of this stuff start? I know you're itching to tell me about the history, right? I could tell you're squirming a little
context.
Bit in your seat.
You need context. You need to know what is going on. Is this just something that happened?
We're like, talking about 2011.
Did the Romans
Please
do this?
Stop.
Did the Greeks do this?
Yes. The answer is
the Mayans,
it was invented by
the
Italians.
Mayans do this?
Was it invented by Italians?
It wasn't
online
invented
dating?
By Italians. But since the beginning of newspapers, which is the 1700s, that's the first time you think of yourself like... There's media helping you to advertise the fact that you're available. And so, like, almost immediately after newspapers start getting circulated widely, the first personal ad gets into the paper.
Come on, even before then, I bet Shakespeare was right. I mean, the only reason he wrote a play was so he could meet
to get
ladies.
Yeah, sure. That's writers,
Have
though.
You seen that movie yet?
Shakespeare in Love?
No, there's a new one. But anyway, I digress.
Okay.
1700s, newspapers.
1727. I read this. It was kind of interesting. A woman named Helen Morrison in Manchester, England.
You're so kind in your description when we talk on the show because I'm reading Giuseppe's. Giuseppe sends me some notes before we record and he says, the lonely spinster.
No, that wasn't my language. That's from the article I read. It said lonely spinster.
I love it.
And she places an ad in the local paper advertising for a husband and the town mayor has her committed to a lunatic asylum for a month.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a lot of stigma there.
I would say. Well, I mean, she was
stigma.
The first. She was the first one.
She was the first. She was, she was groundbreaking.
That we
there.
Know of, yeah.
Except she ended up in an asylum.
For only a month, though. She got better.
That's true. I don't feel so sorry for her. You're right.
All right. I'm teasing. But still, I mean, that is, even now, there's still a bit of a stigma, right?
Sure.
You and I both know a number of people who have met partners, have dated people that they've met online, but there's still a kind of, what kind of people do that?
Well, right? Here, you know, the interesting thing is there is a stigma, but the people who are online, when they're surveyed, don't feel there's any stigma. So it's almost like the more they're into it and the more they're experiencing all these hundreds and thousands of people doing it, the less they feel stigmatized. But I think before doing it, people are right. Like, well, I'd only do that if I'm desperate. Although that, because it's grown and leaps and bound, that stigma has dropped quite significantly.
Yeah, this is part of the problem with the research in this area, right? Is because everything's so new and is changing so fast. We can talk about end of 2004, there were 1 million people on Facebook and it was only at university campuses. And by 2006 or something, they had 12 million members.
Yeah. And, you know, the interesting thing about Facebook is... it's a way of sort of circumventing the stigma that you might feel going to an internet dating site because a lot of people on Facebook are kind of doing the internet dating thing without actually saying they're doing the internet dating thing. Another interesting thing is back, I think it was the 80s, I had a neighbor down the street from me whose mother ran a dating service. Now, it wasn't an internet dating service. It was like a brick and mortar thing.
Oh, wow.
And
this was down the street from you.
Yeah. In the neighborhood that I lived in, she ran a dating service from her home.
Mike, I knew a bootlegger who lived down the street who sold liquor illegally.
No, but I mean,
no dating services.
I can't actually say how legitimate it was. However, it was.
See, I knew this was going to be a fun topic.
No, I'm just saying, I was a kid. How do I know? I don't know anything. All I know is that she had a dating service, right?
Right.
And so people, instead of it being on the internet or in the paper, they mm-hmm. would go to her place of business and put their profiles down, do questionnaires about their interests and personality and all that. The same kind of thing you see in some of these internet dating sites now. And she matched them up.
Less of a stigma, I would say, because you don't have to go. You're sort of anonymous in a way over the internet. You can use a screen name.
That's right.
And instead of having to walk into that building.
That's right.
With the big internet, or not internet, with the big dating service.
That's right.
Sign on the front.
That's right. Now, the interesting thing is that by 1994, the first internet dating site goes up. That brick and mortar stuff died, and their business died. I remember hearing about it, and it was quite...
Just like record stores, right? I mean, so many businesses have been altered by the internet or destroyed by services now that you can get online.
And now, you know, some of the services, like some of these internet dating services, are very niche oriented now, because I think there is, like I said, there is a number of people out there that get frustrated by the sort of larger sites and the inability to find people. And so some of these more niche-oriented things have come about.
Oh, they even have local ones where you can find people who are going to be nearby instead of having to travel around.
5%, about, this is the estimate, about 5% of current marriages or long-term relationships began over the internet. So that still means 95% didn't.
Right.
Okay, so
but 1 in 20.
Yes.
One in 20 marriages.
So it's growing.
Well, it's true. And in 2005, there was, I found this website that has been surveying internet use in the United States for the last several years. And in 2005, they were looking at online dating and found that about 5.5% had tried online dating across all American adults, but 17.5% of single internet users had tried an online dating site. So almost 1 in 5 had tried it.
Right.
If you're just looking at people who are online, who aren't married.
That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
When you're talking about the population of the U.S.
$930 million business in the U.S. That's for 2011.
They make some money, these guys.
I wanted to say a trillion, but I thought it'd be a little bit more accurate there.
932
million.
Not quite a trillion.
Not quite.
But Dr. Evil would not be impressed by that number.
He wouldn't. So we were talking about a common drawback to internet dating is that there's quite a bit of deceitfulness that goes on, and you're never quite sure how much, mm-hmm. right? But they have done some studies to look at that and how people try and deceive other people and on what basis and who's more likely to.
Well, there are two main things that people tend to gloss over or lie about on the internet, and one would be age and one would be weight. That would be my guess. The two major ones that you probably see in almost every profile is a little bit of hedging in terms of the ages and a little bit in terms of weight. There was a guy, it was an article in Scientific American, Epstein, I think was his name, not the guy from Welcome Back, Kotter, but he did some research on this and sort of randomly chose 1,000 Match.com profiles to see what ages were reported and found that there were spikes in the ages for both men and women. So for men around, I think it was around 35, like many more men were saying that they're 35 than any other age. For women, there were a few spikes. So there were a lot of people saying they were 29. There were a lot of people saying they were 34, I think, and 44. And when he looked at the numbers, he found that the difference between the number of people saying that they were 20, the number of women who said they were 29 years old, and the number of women who said that they were between 30 and 34 was 8 times greater than you'd expect just by chance.
It's the old 99-99 rule for trying to sell something, right?
Yeah, well, once you hit 30, you don't want to admit that you're 30 on these websites. And yeah. And he noted that some of the profiles, people on some of the profiles will put not their real age, they'll put a younger age in that box, and in their text description or notes or comments or things, they'll say their real age, and they've put the younger age just so that they don't get ruled out of searches.
It's like what we call in psychology the foot in the door technique.
Yeah, they're kind of gaming the system a little bit.
Yeah. What I was reading is that men tend to misrepresent themselves across many categories, including their interests, their attitudes, their age, and so on. Women tend to misrepresent their weight. That's the one study that I found that was looking at that.
And I did see some data saying that the amount by which they misrepresent their weight increases as they get older. So there's something like, it's usually around 5 pounds when they're in their 20s, and then it goes up from there. 17 pounds when they're in their 30s. They'll say they weigh 17 pounds less than they actually do.
So another study that I found that was kind of interesting is they looked at men and women in different age categories and the kinds of things that they value and they're offering in these ads as okay. well, right? So men, what they found is men tend to value attractiveness and offer status in their descriptions.
Right.
So they're offering, they're
wealthy.
My status. And this is what you would have with me. And women tend to be more selective than men. So in other words, women tend to be pickier.
This sounds a little bit
with age.
This sounds a little bit like offline dating as well.
Yeah. And so I was trying to think, women get pickier with age. Now, why is that? Is that because they trust themselves more and they know themselves more as they get older? Is that what's happening?
Well, that's part of it. And I think self-concept improves typically as people get older, right? So you have a more positive view of yourself. And maybe they're, well, you know, there's also that idea of the biological clock, right? And you think, am I going to waste time and just go and date a whole bunch of people? Or do I want to find the person that I'm going to stick with for many years to come?
That's true. The other thing that I was reading is that men tend to prefer younger women. This is what they're finding.
Mm-hmm.
And that women did not tend to seek younger men until they were 75 and older, then they might seek a younger
man. Wow. Now that's got to be a small sample size. 75-year-olds dating on the internet, right?
Well,
it's hard enough to find 75-year-olds using the internet, although that's changing too.
That is changing.
I guess they're motivated by the dating sites.
Yeah.
Let's get online. I'll learn how to use email and I want to find a date.
So that's one thing, is that there is this problem with deceit on the internet.
Well, and I'm sure that's part of the stigma, right? Is that you never know if the person that you're actually going to meet is going to be the same person whose picture you looked at before.
Right, so they
and
might,
you hear those stories constantly.
You do, and some of them might be married, but they're saying they're single. The other thing that people, I guess, need to be aware of is that the dating sites, obviously, they're there. They're making lots of money, and some of the ways they make money is kind of a disincentive for them to find you somebody.
Right. They want you to keep looking or else you're not going
to
use your site.
That's right. And you're not going to be paying them for... So, sometimes you pay for added features. So you can search, but to contact someone, you might have to pay.
Right.
Or to send a video message, you might have to pay.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, so that's how they...
They can be a bit tricky
about
it.
They do that. So they can have... Now, well, take me, for instance. I registered this morning.
Right.
I'm not a real user.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll give you the sense that there's many more users currently using than there actually is, because people have tried it and left. And so there might be a much larger pool of people that have just left and are not available anymore because they've found someone or because they're discouraged or whatever the case.
Right.
And that's part of the frustration that can happen as well.
If you compare the marketing messages that you get from these sites, and if a third party comes and kind of investigates what the truth is, they're quite a bit different. You know, they might say, oh, we have 50 million active users. I think I read there was one site that said, in their materials, we have 50 million active users. And when someone from the outside went to actually survey how many active users there were, it was much, much less than that. And I think this is a problem with these sites, right? They give you an idea that they're going to match you up with someone that you're going to be compatible with by asking you all of those questions, which, by the way, I'm pretty sure nobody's ever tested to see whether those are good ways to match someone up.
No.
Right? And we've all heard the maxim opposites attract, or you know, different people can complement one another. And if you're only matching yourself up on similarities to other people, well, you're going to lose out on all of that. But there was a number of people who got together to sort of investigate what's going on with, I think it was eHarmony in particular. And one of these guys was, he's a past president of the American Psychological Association. And he said, and this group's idea was, let's be realistic about what these sites can do, because people log onto them and become disappointed if they don't, you know, you've had a profile all day long. And I don't know how many times you checked your email to see if anybody's sent you a message, but you know, people do. If you're actually looking for a date, you're going to be checking your messages often.
I put your email, so you'll have to check yours and let me
know. Yeah, I'm hoping my spam filter will catch all of those messages. So here's what this group said. When eHarmony, and they used eHarmony's actual statistics, so the things that are posted on their website. So they said if eHarmony recommends someone as a compatible match, there's a 1 in 500 chance. 1 in 500 chance that that's the person that you'll marry, that you'll marry that person that eHarmony has recommended. So eHarmony delivers about 1.5 matches per month. And if you dated all of those people, you would have to go on 346 dates over 19 years in order to find the person that you're going to marry.
That's very discouraging. And that's what I said earlier. Like I say, I know a lot of people that have become discouraged with it. But on the other hand, I know quite a few people that, you know, here's the thing that I think is important to remember. The internet dating service is something that is just a way to open up this dialogue with someone. It's not the way to finish anything. It's just a way to open it up. Once you open it up, then it's up to your abilities and skills and face-to-face interactions that's either going to make that relationship work or make it sustainable if that's what you want or not.
I think that's something that's important for people to know about. I think often people who are exiting a long-term relationship are probably using these sites, and then there's young people but younger people, college, university age, or just after that, they're out on the social scene more, right? And so it's the people who are maybe getting older, who are single, maybe suddenly single, who are using these, and they're on these sites because they're looking to meet someone. And often it's because they're looking to meet someone that they can have a long-term kind of a connection with. And I think it's important to be realistic. If you go into a dating site with the idea that it's going to be like a social club that's going to give you an opportunity to meet lots of people, and maybe you'll go out with a few and maybe you'll meet someone, that's probably fine. Your expectations will probably be met because, yeah, there's lots of people that you could meet on those websites. But if you go on looking for a soulmate, number one, the tests that they give you...
And thinking
it's going to happen soon, the tests that they give you aren't necessarily going to narrow it down the right way. In fact, they might be narrowing out people that you would have gotten along with quite well. None of those, to my knowledge, our listeners can correct me if I'm wrong, but none of those have been studied empirically by researchers in peer-reviewed journals or anything like that to see what the outcomes of those tests are. If you go in there with the attitude that this needs to happen, I need to meet someone, I'm lonely and I have to do this right away, well, probably you're going to be disappointed. But if you go
in for more than one reason too,
right,
because that same kind of attitude is going to be probably interfering when it comes to face-to-face interactions too. There's a couple of things here. First of all, only 20% of first contact offers are answered.
Well, if many of the people can't answer those contacts, no wonder.
Makes sense, right? That's right. But that means so 80% of the time that, you know, you've spent all this time, oh, this is the person that I want to contact, seems perfect for me, and only 20% of the time are you getting any response from this person that you've spent all this time trying to get the right person to be responsive with you.
Right.
So there's that. You know, there was a qualitative study that kind of shed some light on the frustrating part of the internet dating. And here's some of the things that they were finding is there's like I only joined today, so I didn't get to experience this part of it, but I could see how this could happen. There's difficulty managing what they're calling serial correspondences. So, you don't just look for one person. You might be managing several people and their emails and what did I say to them and when am I supposed to do this and when are we meeting and who was this? What interest was it that this person had again? And so it gets really difficult just to manage that.
So you'll wind up at a restaurant with Betty on one side and Veronica on the other side, and you'll be running back and forth from your table to the other table.
That's what I have set up tonight. So
that's what happens in Archie comics all the time. That predates internet.
And then the other thing that happens is you start to experience that deception that we were talking about before, and this leads to you being more cautious and putting in more safety measures. I would think this is more women in particular that would feel this. And then it's also much, because you're more anonymous in a way, it's much easier to self-disclose online, and this can lead to premature emotional intimacy. It's almost like
You're jumping ahead in a way
that you wouldn't if you were just all face-to-face the whole time. You know, it would go slower. And so emotional and even physical intimacy is more likely just because everything's just being pushed forward much more quickly because of this anonymity that you feel online.
Right. Physical chemistry, let's talk about that for a second, right? The physical part is important. And I noticed that when you were telling me about the questions that you were asked on that questionnaire, sure, they asked you about your age. Did they ask anything about your appearance?
Well, they asked me to upload a picture.
Which could have been a picture of anything.
I could have put any picture. I didn't put any. Right. And a matter of fact, I looked to see, because right away, as soon as I finished, they already had a bunch of people that matched my profile, which is funny because a lot of it was gibberish. But none of them had pictures either.
Okay, so you matched up with every other fake account.
That's right. I guess what people need to know is that online dating does tend to reduce people to categories, and that's how they're matching you.
Yep.
And that's really a fraction of what you would be in real life, like as a real life person interacting face to face with all, because you know you don't tend to see the negative aspects of someone's personality on these sites. They don't ask you, what are the things that makes it most difficult to be in a relationship with you?
That's right.
You know,
what are your worst qualities? Well, I wish I didn't work so hard.
What obstacles does someone have to overcome to be with you?
I'm so friendly and kind to people that sometimes I forget my own needs in a relationship.
I'm going to spin that, sure.
Right. Well, that's what you do in a job interview. I've heard you in a job interview.
That's right. And it's exactly the same thing. That's what I was going to say. So in a job interview, there's all these experiences that you've had that are going to be of benefit or not to this employer.
Yep.
And you only have a couple of pages on a resume. So of course you're going to present your best face.
You focus on the positive part.
Which means it's just going to be a sliver of you, though. It's not going to be the full you, and that face-to-face is always really what's going to determine whether this is going to go forward into the future or not.
Well, and I think what's interesting about this is that when you're sitting down and doing a profile, if you're serious about your profile, and in fact, when I looked online, there were websites to help you write your dating profiles to get more responses. You can sit down and think about what you want to put on there. You can edit it. You can spend weeks tweaking the wording of things that you've said. Very different from a face-to-face interaction if you're meeting someone, you know, at a party, for example, where they can't edit themselves quite so easily like you can in an online profile.
And the words, those typed words have much more impact than they would have in a face-to-face. So actually there was a study and they got people to, I don't know if you saw this one, where they got people to change just some of the words they were using in the profiles from like and is okay to exciting and awesome and this kind of thing.
Enthusiasm helps.
Enthusiasm, I think there was a threefold jump in the kinds of responsiveness they got from others based on some of these words. But here's the thing. Are we just going to be negative about this whole thing? Well, let's talk about there's a reason why all these, you know, hundreds of thousands of people are on these sites.
That's right. So we've talked about the fact that some people might be deceptive, that some people might have expectations that are too high for what the service can provide, that some people might put too much stock into those psychological tests that you do.
That the providers might have some deceptive marketing practices as well.
So those are some of the negatives, but there are definitely some positives. And like we both said, we know lots of people who've dated through these online sites that have had successful relationships, at least in the short term. I don't know anyone who's gotten married, but that doesn't mean it couldn't happen.
I know, like I said, I know at least a couple of people that have gotten married through this. I think three, actually, now that I think about it. You're meeting people who want to meet people because, you know, a lot of times, let's say you're going to a bar, or you're going to a party, or you're wherever you are.
You're at the grocery store. You're in the library.
You're having to look at, they have a ring on. You don't know. Mm-hmm. Maybe, you don't know what their status is. Here, you're meeting people who, that's their purpose. They're trying to meet other people. So that's a good thing.
I do think that's a good thing. It's a venue where, at least in that respect, you can be a little bit more certain of what's happening and what the potential is.
And you're also meeting people that you wouldn't otherwise meet because you're not in the same social circles, or maybe you're not in even the same city.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely sort of allowing you to go into social circles that you wouldn't normally go into or be invited into or have an opportunity to go into.
Sure.
And there's a wider variety of people who might meet some physical, emotional, sexual, or social criteria that you have. Again, that doesn't mean that you're going to be successful in a long-term relationship going through this, but you have that opportunity.
Yeah, that's true. It's kind of opening up the social circle, and that's really what it's meant to do.
And it's the other thing, the access. You know, so if you wanted to meet someone without the internet, then you'd say, well, let's see, I can go out Friday night, I could go out Saturday night. You know, I might go out on a weeknight as well, but, you know, you might have responsibilities. You have a job, hopefully, if you want to get someone, you should have a job.
Yeah,
or it would help anyway.
How are you paying for your internet connection?
That's right.
You're at the public library on the dating site.
This is it. But see, you know how I got onto eHarmony today was on my iPhone. So it's a mobile device. I have it all the time, anywhere, night or day, and mm-hmm. I can respond to it all the time as opposed to just waiting for my Friday or Saturday night when I go out with friends to a bar or to a party where I might be able to meet someone, which is, you know, still obviously a lot of people still do that. But now here's this other option where you're
opens up
access.
It opens up the opportunity. It opens up the and the access is much more flexible, right? I mean, you could be meeting someone from another city nearby that you never would have met before. So that can offer some interesting opportunities for people to interact with people that they never would have met otherwise. But we've talked about the risk, we've talked about some of the benefits, but we're sitting here as psychologists who are talking about this website, or these websites, pardon me, these services that are available to people. How does psychology inform the online dating service? What do psychologists need to let people know about?
Well, here's another thing that I found that I thought was interesting from a psychological point of view. You would think that maybe people who have some dating anxiety are more likely to use the internet to date
mm-hmm.
because it's a little safer and they're more anonymous and they don't have to, you know, do the more intimidating face-to-face kinds of interactions.
They can get to know someone a little bit online at first before working up the nerve to meet them in person.
That's right, but it turns out that that's not the case. In fact, people with less of a fear in terms of dating are more likely to use the internet. So it's almost like the people who don't need it as much because it is safer mm-hmm. are still using it more. So they don't have fear in face-to-face. They don't have fear with internet either. So they're taking more advantage of it. It doesn't seem that there's that much of a difference. Here's another thing between people who are doing internet dating in terms of their education and income
mm-hmm.
versus those that don't. But you know, I remember quite some time ago we did a show on the big five personality characteristics.
Oh, that was a while ago.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so just to refresh people's memory, there's lots of research on personality and different personality traits, but they've kind of, over the years, they've condensed it into the five main personality traits that people can vary on.
You can be agreeable. You can be conscientious.
Mm-hmm.
Or less so, right? These are all
dimensions. Less so. That's right. Yep. There's the opposite ends of those continuums.
Agreeable, conscientious. let me think now, open
to experience.
You can be extroverted
or introverted.
You can be, what's the, oh, hang on. It's like remembering the names of the seven dwarfs. The last one is...
starts with an N.
Well, it starts with an N, but I always think of it as emotional reactivity.
Yes, exactly. So they call it neuroticism, but emotional reactivity is actually a better way to think about it, because some people are just in the same kind of stressful situation are more reactive emotionally than other people, and that's just a natural trait that people vary on. So what they found when they looked at these five personality traits is that people who were more agreeable, meaning that they kind of get along better, they're more accommodating with others socially.
They're not argumentative.
They're not oppositional and argumentative. Right. Mm-hmm. They're going to have less deception in their profiles.
Okay.
Okay. Conscientious people who are more sort of deliberate and sort of consult their own conscience before they do things,
right,
are less deceptive. People who are more open to experience, more open to their own feelings, more open to the outside world and less shut down, let's say, are again less deceptive. And then there's extroverts.
Extroverts, I already know the answer to this one.
Extroverts are more deceptive on the relationships they've had in the past. They're not deceptive on the basis, like they don't say their interests are any different from what they actually are in real life.
Okay.
But they're more deceptive about previous relationships. They're hypothesizing that the reason for this is that extroverts, just because of the way they engage the world, they're more out there, tend to have had more sexual partners, and that might not be as flattering to the new partner that they're looking for. So there's some deception there with extroverts.
Okay. So many relationships that maybe they're not even purposely being deceptive. You never know. They're just not totally being honest.
Maybe they don't remember.
Maybe they don't remember.
They're too many.
They've met so many people.
And interestingly, the people, that neuroticism dimension, that emotional reactivity dimension, there doesn't seem to be any relationship to deception on that one.
Okay. So personality traits can determine how deceptive somebody's going to be. And the fact is that if you're beginning a relationship with a lot of deception, I mean, beyond shaving a few years off your age or shaving a few pounds off your weight, if you're being quite deceptive in those online profiles, how likely is it that a relationship is going to continue if it's beginning in deception?
Well, I guess it's going back to that same idea that we were talking about before. Like when you present your resume for a job interview, it's always going to be a sliver of who you really are. And it's the same thing that will happen when you do the face-to-face date in the restaurant or wherever you're going to meet, the coffee shop. Mm-hmm. You're still going to present your best face and the warts come later. You know,
well,
if
and
you
that's
get
true
to that
in
point,
any relationship.
That's true in any relationship. So it depends the extent to which you feel deceived. Like clearly deceived when you wind up in that face-to-face relationship later.
Well, and it also depends on what you're being deceptive about. If you are deceptive about your interests, if you're saying, well, I'm interested in this and that and the other thing, when really you're not, well, you're not really going to meet a person who you're necessarily going to be compatible with, who's going to like doing the same things as you.
That's right.
And I think that brings us to our top three things.
Let's do it. And the number one thing to remember is that internet dating is a good way to meet people who you would not have met otherwise, but it's just a first step. It might make it easier to meet people, but not to sustain your relationship with that person. You'll still need to be patient and have some relationship skills.
The number two thing to remember is that the tests that these websites use typically are not scientifically validated, and they might inadvertently eliminate people that you might have been compatible with.
The third thing to remember is that deception is a common problem in internet dating. Present yourself in a good light, but be honest, because this will be the basis for a trusting and intimate relationship going down the road and into the future. And that is it for us. You can visit us at familyanatomy.com or email us at info@familyanatomy.com.
You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. And as usual, we'll leave you with a bit of a tune by Brother Love, and he's over at brotherloverocks.com.
Thanks for listening. Get up and sing, oh, like we used to do. Yeah, cause it's a family thing. Oh. You know what to do.
eharmony.com.